Hi, good morning, everybody. We're going to get started. My name is Elise. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Elise.
Welcome to the Aussie Paw Convention. Some housekeeping before we get started. Toilets are in the main foyer where the registration was. Smoking is at the far end, down there, just away from people, you know. But good stuff. Tea and coffee is available all day in the foyer. So I will read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I will now turn it over to our second chairperson, Evelyn.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Evelyn, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Evelyn.
Do you want to say that?
That's the end.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, the format for this meeting is that there will be two guest speakers sharing for 10 minutes each. We will then be selecting people from the room to share for 5 minutes, each concluding the meeting with a final 10 minutes guest speaker. Speakers will get a 1 minute wrap-up card, which is a yellow flash card. If you have already been asked to share at this convention, please decline to give others a chance. The topic for this meeting is how we established our relationship with God. The reading comes from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 29. How we established our relationship with God. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." I would now like to call our first speaker, and that's Mandy.
Thanks, guys. Hey, my name's Mandy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mandy.
And, my home group is Monday Coomera Big Book Study. Coomera, 7 o'clock. Really love this topic. I've been sober a little bit over 10 years now. And when I first came in the rooms and seen God, it didn't go down so well. But it's okay now, you know. But it definitely wasn't okay for a long time. I had problems saying the word God in any of the prayers. Like, if I could just sort of leave that bit out, I would just say the other bits and not say that. I just couldn't do it, you know. But my desperation to get sober, luckily, you know, won out over the desperation of my brilliant mind that God was no good. And I kept doing what I was advised to do. And I didn't realize this was happening, you know, but that's how I got to know God. And that's how I got to know what God is. And I would hear people in meetings say all the time, "Hand it over, you know, it's a God job, it's a this," you know, and I used to think, what BS is this, you know, like, this is fucking ridiculous. But I didn't have an understanding, you know, because I could read all, the, I could read the prayers, I could be going through the steps with a sponsor, but nothing was changing. I was just getting this knowledge, you know, and you know, we hear all the time that the journey from the head to the heart is the longest journey. And I would hear that too, and I used to go, what does that even fucking mean? You know, what does this mean? I can squeeze it together or... But until I had the experience, I can't speak on it. And it's even hard now to try and speak on God. But I experience God now, you know? And it started with the awakening and the desperation. I suppose it started with the desperation. It was just the one morning of going, I've got to fucking stop doing this. This is out of control, you know? And making the call, going to a meeting, you know, hearing the identification, having that glimmer of hope that, oh, I'm not the only one that wakes up like with the, fuck, I've done it again. What did I do? You know, I'm not the only one that's like that. So I suppose that's how my journey to finding God now as I know him is. And for me, whenever I used to hear people talk about God, I would instantly put them in a category that they're a bit stupid, a bit like, what the fuck do they know? They believe in this one being, you know? I would instantly do that where, like, I'm not that person, honest. I'm not like that, you know? But I have a feeling of God. Like, I've got a plan how to talk. It's not going to go that way. Anyway, I was having a coffee with my sister-in-law, and I was trying to read this book as she was getting the coffee ready about a conversation with God, and I was desperately trying to get a word out of it to keep me going for that day, a little saying, a little something. And my niece is on the floor going, any money, any money, any money. And I'm like, all right, Millie, hang on. Any money, any money. And she's on the floor with her teddies having a tea party. I mean, it makes me cry now. That's God. That is God on the floor having a tea party with your teddies. You know, just the, I don't need a word out of a book. I don't need something, you know. I've got it. Like, God is here. And I've got loads of those experiences, you know. And I had loads of them in early recovery, just the little glimmers of, this world isn't that bad, you know? There was plenty of, this world is fucked, but there was little glimmers of, this is all right. And I went to a crystal and gem show, and it was sort of nice for the first half an hour I was with, you know, a partner. And then I was a bit bored, and they were doing talks, and I went and listened to this talk, and this guy was talking about how crystals are made in the ground, and you know, the sea, and the this, and the that. And I was like, wow, fuck, like, that's the world. This world I live in and a part of creates this beauty. And that was a spiritual experience, you know? Millie on the floor was a spiritual experience. But I didn't know that as I was going through it. And the only way I had those experiences because I was sober. I'd never had those experiences when I was drunk. It was always like, got to get to the pub, got to get to the next party. What am I wearing? You know, how am I looking? Just the busyness of my mind in sobriety has quietened down. It has, but that definitely is a, you know, a double-edged sword because I have a very busy mind, like most people that are, you know, alcoholics, a very, very busy mind, and I have to actively work on, shh, you know, just calm the hell down, you know. I still have to do that now, just like I did when I was, you know, 1 year sober, more. And I had to learn to do that. I had to be shown to do that, you know, with the help of a sponsor. And I'm just so grateful that I had a sponsor that walked me through this big book and the steps and explained the steps in a way I could understand, you know, and I had to take the action. And in the previous meeting, this lady talked about she couldn't build on top of a foundation of, it couldn't just be knowledge on knowledge, you know, she couldn't just build on top of a foundation of like rubble. She had to get down to the roots of, you know, why I was having these feelings, you know. Why was I so sensitive? Why was I so immature? Why am I so overreactive? And then you know, and then it's good to know. But it still happens. These things still happen, you know. At work, oh, my God. Me at work, you know, if somebody says the wrong thing, it's all on. But if I've put in the effort in the morning to be spiritually fit, you know, if I put in an effort to do the whole handing my will and my life over to God, which I understand now, which is not just words I hear in a meeting, you know, for me to make a decision every morning to take the time to, that's what the lady said in the other meeting, if she walks out of her bedroom and she hasn't spoken to God, she's got to go back to her room. Like, she sends herself back to her room. Like, she has to do that. And I would like to say I do that every day. Like, I don't. But if I'm out there in the world and I haven't prayed and meditated, it could go either way. But if I have prayed and meditated, it's normally going to go in a more mature way. But if it's me out there dealing with the world on my own, I'm never quite sure what's going to happen. I was looking at something, and I was all nervous about coming to talk. And I don't know why, but this was in There Is a Solution, and it talks about a spiritual awakening and what you needed, you know. So a belief, this is all going to work, willingness, honesty, and humility. And I had all them in spades in early recovery because I was so desperate. I'm like, I'll sand on my head if that's what it takes, you know. Mm-hmm. I had all that. And then, so they're the essential requirements. And then a spiritual experience with the revolutionary proposals of doing these steps, I get peace and serenity. So because I've been willing to do these things, I have a life now which is a bloody amazing. But it doesn't mean it's still not life. Like, I can still get, you know, insecure at work, insecure with my relationships. My father can pass away, you know, a marriage can break down. All this stuff can still happen, but I can still know I'm in that world where these crystals grow and where little girls have tea parties. And it's like, it's not all crazy, you know, but my mind is a superhighway to disaster. You know, that's my first thought is like chaos, disaster, resentment. It's not a superhighway to peace, you know. Doesn't work that way. So I got to work on getting to the peace. And I suppose that I got there by doing what was suggested. And that's another thing that gets said all the time. It's like, oh, my goodness, what's suggested, you know? But thank God for that, because I'm rumbling now. It took a long time to get how I feel now, but I know I feel it now. Mm. And in my first year, I would get little glimmers of this peace. And now the peace is bigger. And then there's disaster. And then there's big bits of peace. And that, you know, where before it was all disaster, then a little bit of peace. So, I hope that made sense. So thank you for asking me. Thank you.
Thanks, Mandy. Our next speaker is Shay from Brisbane Traditions.
Hi, I'm Shay, alcoholic.
Thanks, Shay.
Gosh, yeah, it is a bit scary to be out the front here. Thank you for asking me to share. For me, a little bit about my history. You know, growing up, I never really had much faith or belief in God. As a kid, I used to have this irrational fear of dying. And then, you know, funnily enough, looking back on it in my drinking career, I did everything possible for me to die early. The car accidents, the waking up in train stations, passing out in all odd spots. You know, I just basically never was satisfied with anything I achieved in life. You know, the only satisfaction or relief I got from my head was when I was drinking. You know, I explained to some people in meetings that I drank to get that feeling, because that stopped my head enough to stop thinking and feeling about all the things that I was feeling. But I had no issues, really. I didn't really have any bad things to think or feel about. And this continued for a really long time. You know, I had a good upbringing. I had a good family that cared about me, that, thankfully enough, at 22, saw problems in me and made me basically go to AA. Like, I had a real intervention thing. People came around and I got spoken to, and I really wasn't ready. You know, it was in Tamworth, and I sat in an AA room with my mother, who's a raging alcoholic, with so much resentment for her bringing me to an AA meeting. And I just saw, you know, like, they probably weren't, a room of old men, you know, and I just wasn't ready to hear it. I saw God on the walls, and that scared me because I didn't understand it. You know, and I was always just chasing for something bigger and better, but I didn't know what that was. And I basically drank from bad, seriously, from 18 till I was 30, you know, in and out of recovery, but never actually reading the book. Like, I was given the big book when I was 22. I never actually read it till last year, and I'm 31 now, you know. And I don't know, I think I was scared of the unknown. And finally last year I was sitting in an AA meeting. It was just a Christmas, I think it was a Christmas night meeting, and a few nights before I had busted and had a drink. And this person wouldn't stop having eye contact with me, and we spoke after the meeting, and she, you know, we had a quick chat, and she said, well, do you want me to take you through the book? And she took me through the book like the first 100 did. You know, we just read the book, she pointed out the prayers and the promises, and, you know, I wanted what she had straight away. And even before we got to the third step, I said to her, how do you talk to God? You know, I felt really naive and silly asking this, you know, saying, but what do you do? Like, do I go, you know, hi, this is Shay? I really didn't know. And for someone who has always wanted control over their life and thought that they knew what they were doing, this was really hard. And she said to me, it's probably not her exact words, but she said to me, you know, God's very old, he's a gentleman, you just introduce yourself. So once she left, I lied on the couch and, you know, I felt a bit silly, you know, lied there and started to go, you know, hi God, this is Shay. You know, I feel like I need you in my life. And I closed my eyes, my kids were asleep upstairs, thankfully, and I had some time for myself, and this feeling came over me, you know. I had what they said, you know, in the solution about an extraordinary experience. You know, I felt like, firstly I thought it was an out-of-body experience, but then I realised it was an inner experience. You know, I felt goosebumps and I felt tingles all over my body, and I felt, wow, I'm not alone. And since then, typical addict style, after I had this feeling, I kept on talking to God because I wanted to get that feeling again. You know, I was like, I want this. I need this feeling. This makes me feel whole. And that was amazing for me. For someone who just, I don't know, was always so selfish, who put myself first. You know, when I did stop drinking, I believe it was my higher power who stopped that. I found out a few months later I was pregnant, and, you know, like most alcoholics were overachievers, I had twins. And I stopped drinking, and, you know, my kids filled me with what I was getting from drinking, and what I now know that I get from God is that feeling of everything's going to be okay. And unfortunately it faded off with my kids, and I thought, you know, once I had children everything would be okay, I'd stop drinking, I'd sort my life out. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, but thankfully, you know, I was brought back to AA because that seed had been planted back when I was 22, and I was directed to someone who could take me through the book like this and introduce me to God. And since then, it's been amazing, you know. People say how I'm now just over 7 months again, but it's people say how difficult sometimes for them that their journey can be. Not at all for me. Drinking was hard for me. You know, my head was filled of how am I going to get it? When am I going to get it? When am I going to drink it? How am I going to get rid of the bottles? That was my head. Now I wake up at 5:20 every morning so I can do my prayers, do my readings, read the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer, and then breathe. And then I get on with my day. And you know, things are just so much better. I know that someone is out there looking after me. And some things that, you know, my sponsor said to me that just made so much sense is, you know, every time I chose to drink, I was putting, you know, alcohol in front of my kids. And as simple as that sounds, that's what really struck with me. And basically that I'm good enough for God, so who cares about anyone else? And I don't know, I still feel a little bit nervous, sorry. What else did I write down? And the fact that in the book, you know, it's in your instruction manual. Seeing I had it for so long, step by step it tells you what to do. And for someone who is complicated like me, I needed that. It says anyone can do this. It doesn't care about who you are, what you believe in. As long as you believe there's something better than yourself, there's better things out there. What else have I got? But I'm very grateful, and I know that I used to think the biggest gift I could give my kids was for them never to see me drink. I now realise it's actually me giving them an understanding and basically an avenue to find out there's a greater thing than them and that there's a higher power, And for that reason, I'll keep coming back. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Shay. I'm just going to read another passage from the big book, and then we'll call on speakers from the audience, and then our final speaker will share after that. And I just want to remind people that this meeting is being recorded, so if you're asked to share and you don't want it to be recorded, just let me know. So I'm going to do a reading from the big book. It's a spiritual experience, which is back in the very back of the appendix on page 567 to 568. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden or spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped into an unsuspected inner resource, which they have presently identified with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spiritual side of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but they are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Dan, would you like to share?
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Hey, my name's Darren, I'm an alcoholic. Member of the Joys of Recovery down in Pottsville, and been clean and sober 21 years. And it was nice listening to the last two speakers and talking about their conception and, you know, the way that they found their higher power. And before I come to AA, I didn't really have any connection with a higher power, you know, with that was given to me, no religious ideas or anything else like that, really. Bit of Sunday school and a few other things like that. So, I had to create and build that. And, I was really lucky that I had some people around me who said that don't let God push you out of the rooms, you know, the word God on the walls. And that was probably one of the best bit of advice that I probably have given in the beginning. You know, and also what they explained to me, what alcoholism is, and the physical craving and the mental obsession, and I'm not going to go into that, but out of that, I was able to identify as an alcoholic, and I was able to see where I had the enough of my experience to prove time and time again that I cannot stay away from a drink. And every time I picked up, couldn't control the amount. And so they said, if that's the case, how can you keep yourself sober for the rest of your life? If you have a mind that will trick you, will lie to you, will convince you that you're not an alcoholic, how can you use any part of your mind to try and combat that? And they explained to me, it's because I have no defence and that I'll need a defence. So if I need a defence against alcoholism, it better be powerful, and it better be more powerful than everyone in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'll lie to you all. I'll tell you that I'm not on my way to go and have a drink or a drug. I'll tell you that I'm travelling really well, you know. And I found that out very easily and very quickly with a few busts by listening to other members talk about how their head was telling them, don't go to the meeting tonight, don't be honest with anyone. And I'd go, wow, I've been thinking that all day, you know. And I had AA members around me who didn't leave me alone. You know, they'd ring me every single day and go, we're going to a meeting. You know, and I'd jump in the car and they'd go, what have you been doing? I'd go, well, I've been thinking of this. And they'd go, you're in trouble straight away, you're thinking, you know. And so, I tried to stay sober for long enough by doing it my way, and it didn't work. And had it shown to me by watching other members and by having someone who took me to my first meeting watch their lives change. And so I got a sponsor. I started going through the program. I was that desperate to stay clean and sober and would still pick up a drink or a drug. I've got one quick little story that is pretty dysfunctional, but it helped me make sure that I need to pray every morning. And what I mean dysfunctional is I don't suggest anyone do it. I don't know how much sober I was, might have been a couple of months sober, trying to live a spiritual, honest way of life. And I get a phone call and it says, the crop's ready to come up. And I'd forgotten all about this crop that we'd put in, trying to live this way of life. And I remember getting on my hands and knees, knowing I'm powerless to be able to not go there. And I'm powerless not to pick up a drink or a drug. And I said, God, if you can get me through today, I'll never go around near these people ever again, and I'll do everything that AA says, even though I was trying to do it. Anyway, so I got through that day, didn't pick up, and at the end of it, I said, I've got to get going. And this one friend of mine, who was a really close friend, who I hadn't seen for months, he said to me, you're going to those meetings, aren't you? And I said, yeah, that's where I'm going. I went straight to a meeting and was honest about what I'd been doing that day and with my sponsor, and got rid of everything. You know, I did sell it because, you know, I was still roped up in that world. It took me a while to be able to try and let go of that world, you know. And from that point on, you know, I've tried to be as honest as I can. It showed that just how cunning this illness is. Because the reality is I shouldn't have got through that day clean and sober, you know. And how much I will try and push the point and think my higher power is going to keep me sober through any situation when I'm doing dishonest things. And the reality is that the whole purpose for me of the steps is to bring me closer to a higher power, to have a relationship with my higher power, to be able to be removed of my resentments and my fears so that I've got that connection, you know, so that I don't need to rely on a drink or a drug to make me feel okay, you know. It's like that obsession gets removed because of it, you know. And I've had the prayers where I'm consistently during the day talking to my higher power, you know. And I found there's a difference between consistent and conscious. And I think it's a big difference for me, because I can sit there and go, oh, God, help me with this. Oh, God, do this and that. But I'm not present. There's no connection between me and my higher power. There's no, I'm all up in my head, like the first speaker said. I'm not in my body. I'm not present in the situation, you know. And I find that that morning time helps me slow down. You know, the step 11 stuff where I'm just slowly going through my day thinking about what areas are going to be filled full of resentments and fear and, you know, and all that type of stuff that I can ask my higher power to help me move through. You know, that sort of stuff, you know, helps me be a lot slower during the day. You know, and, you know, I'm really grateful that those guys in the beginning explained that stuff to me, that I'll need to continue to keep growing on this and doing it, you know. And, you know, I still... These days I'm a lot more flexible in my program, you know. I like to mix it up a fair bit with my prayer and my meditation and stuff like that. It still needs to be morning and night, the reviews and everything, but I need variety, you know. I've been doing this for over 21 years, you know, and if it's not fresh, you know, I'll get bored and I won't want to do it, and the next minute I'm running the show myself, you know, and... you know, that's why I come to things like this, you know. I'll hear something and it'll give me a new little spark and, you know, and it'll be something that I'll put in back into my recovery, and it might be a little hole that could have been missing. I don't know what's missing out of my recovery, you know. And, yeah, so thanks for asking.
Thanks,
Jim.
Thanks, Darren. Sarah from Coomera, would you like to share?
I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sarah.
About God. So I grew up in boarding school and got forced to church and all of that. And I learnt to get through all of those years. I just had to tell people that I believed and just do what I was told. So that's what I did. And I didn't feel it. I learnt it and I had the knowledge base on that religious God, but I just definitely didn't feel it. And when I left school, I never went back. and then I was free to run my life myself. And I think I did get a concept of God when I was in boarding school, because I did struggle a lot with bullying and whatnot, so I did use God a bit, but I just didn't feel it, and I didn't get results I wanted, so I just didn't believe it. But then I went out in the big wide world and I started travelling, and I used to call God fate, and when weird things would happen and I'd be on the other side of the world and I'd see someone I know or some random thing would happen, I'd survive a blackout in a foreign country or something, I'd say that's fate. I was meant to, you know, be alive. And that was just because I was fearful of the God word. And just like everyone else that talks about when they come in and see God on the wall, I couldn't say the word God. It took me about 6 weeks in AA before I could say God. I would just chime in with the Serenity Prayer on line two. Yeah, I don't know. It's just fear. I think I was fearful of, like what Mandy said first up about, if you believed in God, then you were put in that category. Like, I just didn't want to be that type of person. And slowly I realised that all of you were that type of person. And if I wanted to get sober, I needed to give it a go and not be fearful. And but, like true Sarah form, I put a face on and I would say I believe in God and I would say everything I had to say in AA, but I didn't feel it because I was new and I was saying all the right things and I knew how to get by being the perfect model AA person, but I wasn't feeling it. And it took me to be about 4 or 5 months sober. When someone said to me, I think it was my sponsor, said to me, you know, you haven't kept you sober. And I really had to agree with her that I couldn't get me sober for 3 days, never mind 4 or 5 months. And that was really the first time that I did start thinking, maybe it isn't me. I did just don't know, give up and think, well, maybe there is a God out there. And I still, 4 years later, don't understand what it is. I don't know. I've tried church. I've tried crystals. I go to the Crystal Palace and I feel all very spiritual, and then 2 weeks later I forget about it. I've tried everything, but I know the feeling I get when I give up, that's God. And someone said to me a couple of years ago to dob on yourself when you, like the last speaker was saying, like just being honest. And I find if I, when I first started in AA, I made a bit of a, you know, rule with myself that I wasn't going to be dishonest. And I didn't care what it was about, even if it was stupid things. And I heard someone say once in a meeting, when they leave the trolley in the car park and don't take it back where it belongs, the spiritual consequences of that is you think about it for the rest of the day. And that's the kind of shit I have to be honest about. And if I ring my sponsor and tell her things like that, it's out of my head and it's out there and it's honest, and I feel peace from that. So that to me is God. And usually I get a God response, which is not my response, but it's someone who knows better, and it's not running my life in my head. It's someone, whether it's my sponsor or whether it's another member of AA, to ring and dob on myself, I usually get a good response. And I believe that that's God talking to me. And I get it from fate, you know, when weird things happen, and I get it from people talking to me. And I don't understand God, but I do struggle with meditating in the morning, and I still run the show myself. I just said in the toilet on the way here to my sponsor that I still feel one. I'm four, but I still feel crazy like I was when I was one, and I'm kicking and screaming, and I refuse to pray in the morning, and it all turns to shit. But, you know, I just have to grow up, really, and do what I'm told. But as long as I'm still being honest about it, even though it's embarrassing at four that I still talk like this, I just have to keep doing that. Otherwise, I've got no choice, and I will end up going back to drinking. So that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. A gentleman, would you like to share?
Hello friends, I'm Andy, I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hi Andy.
I'm up here from down Canberra way. So when I came in, hearing people talk about God or hearing people telling me how I had to pray to get it to work, it was like white noise, and I got that offended that I just wanted to leave the room, you know. And wasn't... At first, I thought I didn't believe in the concept of a God, and that was based on the fact that I'd prayed many times for bail, and I'd prayed for the dealer to turn up, and it never happened, you know? So God didn't give me this shit, so obviously I don't like him, I'm not going to, you know? So I was talking to my sponsor about that, and, you know, the problem was not that I didn't believe. You know, the problem was that I didn't have faith and trust. And the way he gently put it to me was that, how can you resent something you don't believe in? If you don't think it exists, how can you be angry at it? It took me a while to get a connection. Like in the early days, I'd just pray so I could tick that box in the morning, you know. And I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go, here we go again. I'm going to pray. That's done for today. I don't need to worry about it, you know. And so what happened with me, how I actually realised that God was doing something for me that I couldn't do for myself, was when I started the steps and I was going through the steps and, you know, sitting there, holding hands with a grown man, doing the third step prayer, doing the seventh step prayer, with no belief or power behind that coming from winning, you know. And when I realised that there was a change happening was when I was doing my seventh step, my ninth step, and I'd make an amends to somebody, And instantly the guilt and shame regarding that person would be gone. Within a second, it was gone. You know, I'd spent years avoiding these conversations. I'd spent years trying to think. You know, that stuff of thinking about the past and hoping for a different outcome? You know, that's what it was like. You know, trying to think my way out of something that I had absolutely no power to change. You know? And that's when I realised that it was happening. And, you know, that was my turning point. You know, I'd been in recovery. I'd been around the rooms, not in recovery, I'd been around the rooms for quite a while. And, you know, I'd have a sleeper, I'd pick up, and I'd have 9 months dry, I'd have 2 years dry, I'd have 3 years dry, you know. And I say that because there was no emotional sobriety in there at all, you know. It was that white knuckle, I'm just, you know, towards the end of that, it'd be like I'd come to a meeting late so I didn't have to talk to anybody, and I'd leave before the Serenity Press so I didn't have to talk to anybody, you know. But I could say I was doing meetings. And, you know, my experience was that everything on the outside becomes good really quickly. You know, you're no longer drinking or drugging, so I got employed, I could study, I got into a relationship. But the stuff inside was not well. You know, and when things started to become really stressful, which is what life does, it becomes stressful, I go to fix it with what I thought fixed it before. And that's, you know, it's sex, it's shopping, it's money, it's, and all that leads up to using again or drinking again, you know. You know, my problem is that I'll drink again and then it's not enough, so I start using. That's my story. You know, either to increase the effect of it or make it, because I don't get that two drinks and going, I've got to get that as out of as I am, and I'm you know. That's the relief, because I'm not thinking on it. And I wake up in the morning and I still have that emptiness inside, so I've got to do it all again, you know. Now, I found my experience is that the closest that I ever am to my higher power is when I'm working through a character defect, because that's when I'm more likely to ask for help, you know. When everything's going well, I'm not as sincere, you know. I still do it, especially like a single dad, kids, I'd go, God help me not be angry, you know. And whether that at work or whether it was just that pause when agitated stuff, it doesn't matter, the result was the same. You know, I'd be able to deal with them, not with Andrew the child, but with Andrew the adult, you know. And that's the difference, that's the stuff that happens. And, you know, I still have those days sometimes where I wake up and I go, here we go again. I have moments when I'm, you know, down and up and down and up and, you know, but it's heaps better than what it was. If I had not stayed around, if I came in and expected it to all be great, I would have gone out there and out there and out there and out there. But, you know, somebody kept saying to me that it will get better. And I remember somebody said, it doesn't matter whether you're two days sober or 20 years sober, the best is yet to come, and I hold on to that, you know. You know, the problem with me was believing whether I deserved the best. You know, I'd get stuff happening, and that self-sabotage stuff would kick in, you know, so that I can reinforce that stuff of, this is all I deserve. It takes a while to get out of that stuff, you know, but I don't get it through sitting in a chair just hoping to absorb it from my arsehole, you know. I've had to do a little bit of stuff for that to happen, and sometimes it's a bare minimal, but it still gets results, you know. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Lady here, would you like to share? Wendy. Yeah.
Hello. Hi, everybody. My name's Wendy, and I'm from Albury, so not very far away from Canberra. And my home group is the Friday Serenity Group.
Hi, Wendy.
Wow, sitting here and listening to other speakers has taken me back to when I first came in to the program, and the only God that I had known about was a religious God. And, you know, as a child I went to Church of England with my father on Sundays, and then, you know, as I got a bit older I went to Sunday school. But on my way to Sunday school I used to get distracted and, you know, find stray animals and try and find homes for them. So, you know, and then it became, instead of going to Sunday school, it'd end up down the creek smoking cigarettes and things like that. And as I got older, you know, God just went out the window is what I had known him. And I need to tell you this part of my story, but, you know, I got married when I got married, I married a Catholic man who came from a good Catholic family, and I had been married before. And so, you know, really I was not accepted by his family because I wasn't Catholic, and because I'd been married before, you know, they didn't see that I was good enough for his son. So I thought that if I changed and became a Catholic, then everything would be all right, that was what was missing in my life. You know, I thought, that's what it is. I need to be a Catholic and, you know, and everything will be fine then. Not knowing all that time that I had that holiness in here, that now, you know, now I know what it is, and I did change my religion and I became Catholic and it didn't make any difference. But, you know, that's just part of my journey, and it's where my God took me, and, you know, where I needed to go to grow. So, you know, unbeknown to me back then, I, you know, such low self-esteem, low self-worth, and, you know, was in a marriage and very, very childish, very self-centred, very self-seeking, you know. I had never grown up. I picked up a drink when I was 14, so I believe I was probably still 14, you know. Anyway, I have 6 children and, I picked up a drink. I thought that alcohol was the answer to everything. I started drinking when I was 14 too, as I had just said, but I loved alcohol. I loved what it did. I loved the effect, and it just made me feel like I enjoyed life so much. So hence, I don't know how many years into my marriage, you know, like, I started drinking heavily again, and, you know, I was always the last to leave the pub, and if we were there with and sitting with other women, I would end up going to the toilets through the bar, get a drink, come back, so they didn't know that I was drinking more than them, you know, because I couldn't sit on one glass of wine. And it wasn't until I came in here that I you know, saw that in myself too. I didn't know that there was anything. Well, I must have known there was something wrong with it, because why else? But I just wanted to be like them, you know, and I couldn't do that. But, you know, in the end, it got worse, obviously. It does. It gets worse. And this is my 3rd attempt at AA. And the second time around, I had my family believe that Alcoholics Anonymous had taught me how to be a social drinker. So I had my social cask of wine in the fridge, and I had all my other wine hidden in my wardrobe. Yeah, and, you know, it is funny, because then the worst thing is then, you know, you drink half a cask of wine or a litre of wine, and then I had to pretend that I was sober, and that was really difficult. Anyway, you know, a girlfriend brought me in here because she had seen me struggling, a girlfriend that I drank with. And when I came in here and saw the word God, I thought, oh, my God, no, nah. You know, I just thought it was a religious God, because that's all that I knew. I didn't know very much at all about spirituality. And anyway, I don't like being told what to do, but I wanted what you had. And so I became willing to go to any lengths. You know, it tells me in the big book that no human power could relieve my alcoholism. And I had been and searched and done everything. And so, you know, it says at step 2, came to believe. And I was, you know, it was suggested that I read from the daily reflections, and I started reading in the morning and I faked it till I made it, you know. Then I started reading from the 24-hour day book, and that to me was a really religious book, and I still kept reading it. And it was just like being on a bicycle, you know. I just kept pedalling and the training wheels came off, and I still kept pedalling. And, you know, I was still faking it till I made it. And some days I did it better than others. And then it was a decision to turn my will and my life over to God. And because I'd known that no human power could relieve my alcoholism, maybe God could. And so, again, power of example, and that's what I did. And I started with suggested again to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And that's what I did every morning. Some mornings I took, and most mornings I took it back, and I still take it back, but not as much, you know, not as much as I used to. I have a God in my life today. I've been sober for 14 years, and, you know, I could never do that. I left a rehab, and I thought, my God, how am I going to stay sober today? And, you know, I was told just to do it a day at a time, and I did it a minute at a time, half a day at a time, and I put God in my life, you know, and God has me here today, sober, and I've got a life that I never, ever thought I'd be living. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Vic, would you like to share?
Hello. Hi. My name's Vic. I'm an alcoholic. Sober today, thanks to the grace of God and the 12 steps. I love the topic. I love all the topics. I love how it's very big book orientated. I love that. I too grew up with a Catholic education. As a young lad, as I grew up, I left. It was uncool, so I just left that alone as I grew up, and then I went on to discover alcohol and drugs for the next 30 plus years. Only communication I had with God during that time was usually when I woke up in a cell and not knew how I got there. You know, it was, please don't let it be murder or armed robbery. I haven't got time for that sort of jail, or, you know, sitting in car parks for 4 hours waiting for the dealer to turn up. I'll give me 5 more minutes and I'm going, you know. And he turns up, oh, hey, go, mate. When he gets here, I'm going to kill him, you know. Yeah, did that a bit. Yeah, so it, yeah, and that's how it went on, you know. My story is my story. It's not the same as everyone's story, but I'm an in and outer. My first AA meeting was around 1990. I didn't go into the door. I went to the establishment where it was, but I didn't go inside. I got to the front door. It was at the old Surfers Paradise State School, and I lived there at the time, and I figured that if someone saw me coming out of an AA meeting, it would make me look bad. Walking through Surfers Paradise, pissed to the eyeballs, urinating in the street, wasn't bad, but coming from an AA meeting was. So my search started a long time ago. I searched for an answer to me everywhere I could. I read lots of books. I went and did courses. I got hypnotized. I had kinesiology. I did all of the things that probably worked very well for non-alcoholics, you know. And I actually paid $700 once to learn how to scream into a pillow. I wasn't real bright. I never said that. And that was awesome. You know, the neighbours didn't already talk to me then when they started hearing that shit. Wow. Yeah, on top of their emptying all of my empties out of their bins and me screaming and anyway. The search continued until the point where my arrogance, which I know I saw in my inventory, my arrogance stemmed from when I was young. I was very strong physically and resilient, you know. It was, you know, I went into the construction industry straight away, and, you know, you drank all night, and if you could back up and work the next day, well, you were a man, you know. And that, it took for me to get very, very physically sick, and I was too afraid to drink anymore. By that stage, alcohol had stopped being a social lubricant. It had stopped shutting my head up, and drugs. It just didn't. All it did was get me out of it enough to collapse on the floor and sleep, you know, for until my head woke me. I knew of AA. As I said, I've been in and out, usually for a couple of weeks, usually once I started to get physically well, or someone would make the mistake of saying, "You're doing really good, Vic." I'd say, "Oh, I'm out of here. See you later." 6 months later, I'd come back with my tail between my legs. Or if I was broke and hungry, I'd come to a meeting because I knew there was biscuits. And that was it. I did nothing. Just sat on the seat. And as I said, it took for me to get that gift of desperation. I came to AA with knowledge. It took me a little while and a few. It's funny how it happened. I knew God. I know now that God was working in my life then, because the right people were put in my path for where I was at that time. And I needed to let go of that knowledge in my head, that belief that I was a very intellectual individual. You know, I've been a concreter my whole life and I just passed high school. So, the wind-up already. I established my relationship with God when I took the third step with my sponsor and members of my home group at the Scout Hall in Nambour, nearly making me choke up saying that. My current sponsor, took me through the 12 steps as it's written in the book. When I took that third step, for the first time in living memory, I had silence between my ears. That's when it started. From then on, it gave me... I've heard it described once, to go on to do my fourth step in the loving embrace of step three, and it was a fearless inventory. Prior to that, it was my intellectual inventory, so it was very fearful and wasn't honest. And since then, I through the process of the steps, I was given the tools to live out there, and I pray. I don't practice this thing diligently every day. I still pray, and not only is God a gentleman, I've heard that, but he's pretty understanding. He still looks after me despite myself and in spite of what I don't do. And the results are that I have a very, very happy life. I have peace between my ears. I have more love, more happiness and more joy in my life than I ever thought could be possible. And the only reason that happened is I've come here to Alcoholics Anonymous. The only thing I heard was keep coming back in the early thing. That's the only thing I've done really well. And the 12 steps and my relationship with God. And it's very good to be here. And thank you for asking me to share.
Thanks, Vic. Our final guest speaker for this meeting is Jody H.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jody and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jody.
So today, by the grace of God, as I understand, it's been awesome listening. I've just related to everything that everyone said, you know, and my background with God, I suppose, is I've always believed in a God. Like when I was a little kid, I grew up in a house of atheists, and my earliest memory is my sister and mother like sitting at the breakfast bar and having their brekkie, and they must have been talking about God for some reason, or Jesus, they weren't talking about God, and they were talking about Jesus at the time, and I was only about 6 years old, and I remember walking into the kitchen and my sister said, "You don't believe in any of that Jesus shit, do you, Jody?" And just that tone, I went, "No, no." And I went over to the fridge and I opened up and went, "Sorry, I really do." And I can remember that like it was yesterday, you know. And I've carried that with me my whole life, you know, really worried about what other people think. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was surrounded by people that believed in God, so did I. And if they didn't, of course not, you know. Die at the extent, you know, you don't want to be a dag or anything. And I certainly didn't want to be a Christian because I just had preconceived ideas that you've got to have bobby pins and floral dresses. And I'm not doing that. I don't even know where that come from, you know. It was just crazy. But like other people, you know, I always believed in God when I was in the lockup. You know, when I'd run a mark and I'm in there going, "God, get me out of this world. I'm so sorry." Because I don't know what I'm charged for. And I did some horrendous things in my drinking and maimed people's bodies and So I didn't know if it was going to, like Vic, you know, I didn't know if it was going to be murder. And that's frightened the absolute shit out of me because I never knew. And, you know, in the 12 years of drinking, I can probably remember 5 times. And that's if I didn't have speed or mushies. But, you know, I always had blackouts. So I had no idea, you know. And you know, and if I'd wake up feeling bad, you know, the prayer was always, God, please don't let me be pregnant. I'll do anything. I'll never sleep with another bloke for the rest of my life. It was just, so that was my relationship with God, you know. But the difference of the day before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was feeling so rat shit over what I'd done for that one more time. And it wasn't even as bad as every other event. It had nothing to do with it. It was just at the end where I just didn't want to feel like that, how you wake up, for another ever for the rest of my life. That guilt, shame and remorse was just too much for me to cope with, you know. And it's like you want to be dead, but you just want to be dead for 3 days while it passes. come back, you know, and everything's all right. But, oh, my God, you know. And I remember saying to God that morning, why does this shit keep on happening to me? And I believe I had a spiritual experience, although I didn't know it was that at the time, but I know that I had a moment of clarity where I could see me for the very first time as being hopeless. And there's no getting away from that. Once you see it, you see it. That's it. Killed. You know? Like, there was no excuses whatsoever. There was absolutely nothing. And then I didn't know what to do, you know? A lady who'd come around that, you know, that morning was from the night before, let me know everything that I did. So then I wanted to die. And another lady that came around after that was someone where I ended up drenched in her front yard in that night. And I remember saying to her, I started to talk to her about what this lady had said to me, and she said, oh, God, you know, like, instead of whinging about it, go and do something about it. And she gave me a phone number of a lady who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called her, and she came around to my place and told me that she'd take me to my first meeting and gave me a brochure, you know, like the letter to the woman alcoholic. And I remember bawling my eyes out reading that because it spoke about how I felt. And I couldn't say that. Like, I'm not from an educational background or, you know, or somebody who's ever read a book in their life about emotions or never even heard the word meditation or spiritual. They just were not a part of my upbringing at all. You know, so, like, meetings for me being like English lessons. I know when they said projection, I thought of the overhead projector at school. I didn't know anything. Thank God I didn't know anything. It's actually been my greatest blessing. And, you know, and so I felt good about that, you know, until it was time to come. And then I came to meetings. And I didn't even know that I was an alcoholic. I just know that I'm an asshole when I drink. And it was by identification with everybody that I found out that I was an alcoholic. And prior to coming, I would pray to God to keep me sober and ended up maggot drunk. And I've never asked God to keep me sober since the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. It's like there's no problem. There's no solution in the problem. You know, I just had to keep coming to these meetings, and I, you know, heard that I had a disease, and I hated that. I just thought that's the biggest cop out I've ever heard in my life. You know, I want a better answer than that. But it makes sense to me today, and you know that I have an allergy to alcohol. You know, when you have an allergic reaction, something happens, and shit, when I drink, something happens every single time. You know. And I understood that, and I'm really thankful that I did all my giving up drinking before I got here. You know, I got sober in 1991 and haven't had the excuse or reason to have a drink from that day forward, by the grace of God only. It's definitely not me. Mm-hmm. And I was coming here for 6 weeks trying to be the best person I could absolutely be and be as honest as I could be, you know. And I was stark raving sober. Like, I was like trying to look after these little kids, and I, you know, I was just mad, and I was the best person I could be at the meeting and trying to fit in, and, you know, I could understand everything when they were talking about shit, but when they were talking about recovery, I had no idea what they were talking about, you know. And all I heard constantly was that it was about doing the steps, but I never heard anyone say how they did it. You know, and then I went to a meeting and this old bloke got up and said, I've been coming here for 25 years and I'm still recovering. And I thought, I went home, bawled my eyes out. I thought, I haven't got 25 years in me. I'm not doing this shit for 25 years. I was 24 years old, for God's sake. You know, there was no hope in that for me. Yet, you know, when I asked somebody to be my sponsor, they gave me all the hope. They showed me the very first page of Alcoholics Anonymous that said how many thousands of men and women have recovered. I've recovered, you know, you actually recover here. You know, it doesn't mean you're cured, of course. I'll have alcoholism for the rest of my life, but I no longer a hopeless state of mind and body without a shadow of a doubt. I know, you know. And like everyone else said, you know, it comes from those actions. You know, when I often giggle to myself when I hear somebody say that they're working on step three. It's like, what does that mean? Does that mean you're working on the bend? Like, what does it mean? It's a prayer, for Christ's sake. You know, it's like, how long can you take to do that? It's, you know, there's so much misinformation in the fellowship, you know, unfortunately, through time and outside influences and books like Vic talks about, you know, like a whole new world. You know, there's definite terminology and actions that are in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that are not, goes against all the self-help books, you know, that talk about feelings and triggers and self-esteem and all those kind of things. In here, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about courage from God. I have courage. I don't have to worry about how I'm feeling. I just, I love what Mandy said before, you know, she had to get down to why she was feeling like that. My honesty isn't being honest about how I feel. It's being about honest about the shit I'm doing that's making me feel like that. You know, I've got to get honest. And I had no idea how to do that. And it was only by doing that third step prayer with a sponsor, you know, and asking God what needs to be revealed from my past so that I could be at one with him. In a big chunk did I get the truth about myself, and I had to write it all down, you know. And it was like embarrassing. I remember how embarrassed I was when I was writing down my inventory because shit was coming up that I didn't want to tell anyone ever, you know. And one of it, which I'll share with you, because it had such a big impact on me, was my father, you know. He took his life when I was 12, and I got a lot of sympathy for that. And then it started to sort of dissipate a bit, you know. And so I told my best friend that he raped me, and I got a lot of attention out of that, but he didn't. It's a lie. And I also told her when I was younger, you know, that I had a miscarriage. I love self-pity, you know. It's like, give me all the attention with it. And so three lies I told this my best friend. And it plagued me, you know. I used to think, when I die, somehow I'll have 5 minutes left so that I can tell the truth. Like, I already wanted to tell the truth but never had the courage to do it. And it was obviously, like, the quest of life for me at that time. And it was like, you know, somehow I'll be able to fix this up. And of course it came up in my inventory, and then I had to make amends to her for it, you know. And I felt good about getting it off my chest and sharing it with my sponsor. But I still didn't, felt very uncomfortable about having to admit that to my friend. I was still, my pride was crushed, you know. I didn't want her to think I'm like this, but it's who I was. But I made that promise, you know, that I'll go to any length for victory over alcohol. I'll do whatever it takes. What a bastard, you know. And it's nothing I want to do, but I had to face up to it, you know. And finally I dialed the number and I said, oh, Nick, you know, there's three things that I need to make amends to you for. And she said, oh, you didn't sleep with my husband, did you? I was so stoked. I thought, well, I haven't done that. It was awesome. You know, it just took the load off, you know. And I told her, you know, that was a lie about Dad. She said, oh, I knew you were piss talking shit. So she's never thought about that for another day, and that plagued me for 12 years, you know. It's just like, I'm so important. It's just outrageous. And that's how, for me, the promises come. I'll know a peace. You know, I can't quote it right now, but, you know, that's why I have peace today, is because of those actions, you know, those horrible actions that I've got to face up to the wreckage of my past. And, you know, I can't change any of my past, but I can front up and face up to my past, you know, and that's what I have to do to get those promises. And like somebody said before, you know, about their daughter, you know, like there's a member of our group, Chrissy, who says, you know, she's been here long enough to have a good past, and that's my experience. Thank God, you know, it could be so different. And I love the fact that an opportunity that I had, that I have never ever sponsored anyone in my sobriety that hasn't asked me to be their sponsor, because I'm not an evangelist. It's like, if you want what I have, ask me and I'll help you for sure. Like, that's how it is, except my daughter. My daughter was at a point in her life where she was suicidal, and she actually went to throw herself under a train, and one of her friends grabbed her and pulled her out just in time. And so I knew where she was at. I knew she wasn't playing games. Like, she was rat shit. And I just said to her, look, I can show you what I do if you want it. And she did. She was so rat shit. She had that gift of desperation, thank God. and said yes. And so we went through the steps, like took her through the steps. And what that is one of the greatest gifts in my sobriety is being beside a member. Well, she's not a member, you know, but she's went through the steps and loves God with a passion and knows this program inside out, you know, as my daughter. Like, I've got my best friend as my daughter, and we laugh about the truths of our lives and know, you know, because when you tell the truth, it's hilarious, you know. It's like nothing makes me laugh more, you know. But anyway, thanks for letting me share.
It's been lovely. Thank you.
Wow, what an awesome meeting for me. I hope you all got as much out of it as I did. And, yeah, thank you very much. Follow the instructions, Evelyn. Thank you for our guest speaker and to all guest speakers and all to who shared. Okay, so some announcements. Smoking is allowed at the end of the veranda near the ramp. Please see the tins provided. Tea and coffee is available in the foyer. Toilets are located in the foyer. Please be advised that all AA meetings are being recorded and the files will be available on Dropbox. Literature, T-shirts and caps are available in the foyer. Our next break will be 10:30 a.m. morning tea served in the main room. 12:30 p.m. will be lunch, chicken and veggie soup with bread rolls served in the main room at a cost of $5. 3:30 p.m. afternoon tea is served in the main room, and 6:30 p.m. is dinner in the main room for ticket holders. Our next meeting will be here in room 2, held at 11 a.m. Room 1 is the cornerstone, step 2, and this room, how to treat spiritually sick people. Okay. Last-minute announcement. Aussie Par Group Conscience. Aussie Par Group Conscience for YPAR. Committee members who have travelled from interstate is in meeting room 2 behind the registration table at 12:45 p.m. I'm presuming today.
Today.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
I've got a spare dinner ticket if anyone's.
Cool, thanks.
Okay, thank you for that. And what was your name?
Loretta.
Hi, Loretta. So can you please join us now for the Surrender Your Prayer, and we hold hands to symbol that no alcoholic needs stand alone.
To a higher power of your own understanding.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it. It works if you work it.